Hello, it's AFQ Football. It's John Gibbons hosting this week. I'm in for Adam Smith, who's on his holidays, but people would have seen him on the whistle video looking absolutely resplendent by the sea in a lovely hat. So, Adam, we wish you all the best, and I'll try my best to deputise his AFQ Football skills. So I'll try my best. And you guys have tried your best as well. We've got some great questions for our panel, and that panel is Robbie O'Neill, Fio Adesan, Harry Aprayer, and Nicky Cornish. So we're going to start with the atmosphere. So it's a bit of a heavy one, but a bit of a heavy duty one. And because there's quite a lot of questions on it, I'll just read out the starter from Gareth Cullen. He said, "Why is the atmosphere so crap this season? Spent the duration of football behind closed doors thinking we'd be get back to a year-long party, but it's more like a wake most weeks." So there's a bit of a debate there on whether the COVID's been a factor. Charlie Jones has jumped in with this. All the complaining about the tourists creating a ship atmosphere in the past. Is it fair to say that it may have been those spending thousands to get into Anfield that may have raised the noise? Obviously said there's a bit of a caveat, and I'm well aware what can be done, but it could have some truth in it. So I feel like we've got a good panel for this. We've got Scousers, we've got people who live in Liverpool, we've got people who live away, we've got a Scouser who moved down south, a Southerner who moved up here. So you know what I mean? It's like it's every surely every viewpoint. I'll start with you, Harry. Do you think it's a bit... Do you agree with it, first of all? Because, you know, has the atmosphere been notably worse this season, do you think?
Yeah, I'll start by saying you've already sort of failed with Adam Smithing, because he always criticises me or does something to rip me in the first minute when he introduces my name. So you haven't done that yet. So it was like a good start for me. I think the atmosphere, I don't know, it's such a weird one, because I went back when the crowds were allowed, it was 10,000 the game I went back for, and it was absolutely literally, when I say electric, it felt electric, and it felt like there was not it felt like the ground was absolutely full at that point, and there was only 10,000 in there, and I wasn't expecting that. And obviously there was so much excitement because people hadn't been for so long, and now we're back into a bit of a routine of being able to go to the match again week in, week out. It does feel a bit flat, and I can't really pinpoint what it is, but I won't deny that I've been to games and I've got to the end and I've thought, God, like really, 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 we didn't get going there. And I think it really stands out to me at times, like in the Arsenal game, for example, when Arteta like got the crowd going, and you understand like how loud it can be and how good we can be at points when we're roused, when we feel like there's something to play for. And it's just not really been like that at times, and it's a bit frustrating. Like, even You'll Never Walk Alone at the weekend, I thought was quiet. I did think it was quite quiet. I don't know if it's like a nerve thing. I don't know if people just are a bit like, you know, feel like there's not that much to pay for at this stage in the season already, which I disagree with. I don't know if it's I don't know if it's people that are being able to go every week, so maybe not making as much noise as people that would just come for a one-off game. I don't know what is contributing to it, but I do agree that has been a little bit flat, and it does make me a little bit sad. I don't know if that was a long-winded way to say I agree, but that's my kind of thoughts on it.
It's funny, Robbie, because you know, when we couldn't go with it, we were all out back. You had a lot of people saying, "I'll never take it for granted again," and all this. I'll always remember what it was like to not go, and I'll always feel special going in. I reckon that lasted about 2 months. You know what I mean? And then suddenly it's just sort of normal again. And I would just say, although, I mean, it'd be lovely to still have that feeling, you know, that everyone had, that it's, you know, first game back and stuff like that. I'm just not sure never in our history has a 2 o'clock Sunday against Brentford been a good atmosphere.
No, it's not. And I think one of the lads mentioned in one of the WhatsApp groups from him the other day. He was at the game and he was a bit annoyed. He was a bit miffed with people going off about the atmosphere. And I thought rightly so, because it's Anfield's got a reputation for its atmosphere, but it's not like week in, week out kind of European continental raucous, is it? It's not La Bombonera. It's not like, you know, bog roll flying everywhere and chaos. It's like when the team, I always feel like Anfield's at its best, particularly it's night games when the floodlights are on. That's always when the best atmospheres are. But when there's something really riding on the game, and it's a game where our back's against the wall kind of thing. And historically, like I don't go anywhere near as much as I used to now. I live down here, and so I think I've only been to one game since the restart. But historically, I don't know. Maybe it's different when you're in the crowds. You know what I mean? It always feels different when you're in the crowd than when you listen to it. I didn't watch the game yesterday. I listened to it on the radio because I couldn't get a stream, so I listened to it on Five Live. I was giggling to myself listening to the atmosphere. I was buzzing off the Rafa Benitez shout and an old loads of fuming about it. But I just knew how much that had wind Evertonians up. So in my own mind, I was thinking, you know, we're 1-0 up, we're a goal up. Everton was just sacked the manager who used to be our manager. And people are having a laugh there. And I think that's part of it. I think that the wit of Anfield is something it's as famous for. And I think that's still there. I don't think it's ever been a particularly consistently loud ground. I mean, when it's on form, it's louder than anywhere. Don't get me wrong. But I don't think it's a consistently loud ground. So I wasn't, you know, it didn't do my head in as much as it. I mean, I wasn't there, so, you know, I can't really pass that much of a judgment, but it didn't do my head in as much as it did others. I'm not gonna lie.
I think that the point you make about, you know, the type of atmosphere Anfield's always had is completely fair. You know, it's not Borussia Dortmund, they were just singing forever. It's always been reactive to what's going on the pitch. And Nicky, if it is a bit flat on the pitch, it'll be a bit flat on the crowd. If something goes like the Arteta thing that someone mentioned before, you know, it sort of flares up. But also, you know, we know what to do when we're needed, I think. And so that's why I've got, you know, I understand sort of both arguments that are made so far, but I'm sort of a little bit closer to Robbie in that it's always just sort of being like this, really. And if it was Barcelona every night, well, fucking hell, we never got to work.
Yeah, I agree. I think this whole thing, in my opinion, has been blown out of proportion. I'm with you. I've been to plenty of games in the 90s where early kickoffs, it was like it was yesterday. And we seem to have had a lot of early kickoffs lately. I mean, it was no surprise to me what the atmosphere was like yesterday. And I think as well, you know, the difference, I think yesterday, it was interesting because I don't know whether anyone picked up on this, but Henderson it was about the 70th minute. I don't know whether we were 1-0 or 2-0 up. And he turned round to the main stand. He was doing, you know, what Klopp does, you know, yeah, lifting his arms up and saying, come on, shout. I think he was thinking, just stop groaning at things we're doing. Because actually, you know, yesterday they were trying a lot of different things. And I thought it was really interesting, Klopp, at the end when he went up to the crowd, because it was his normal fist pump. Because, well, it was in a way, but normally it's the crowd getting him to do it. And he did it without any encouragement and was kind of going as if to say, come on now, you've got to join in with us. And I think actually the first few months, as Harriet said, it was really buzzing. But I think it's a combination of a lot of early kickoffs. And also, I just think in the Premier League, I think, you know, if you go back to 1920 when it was really buzzing in the ground, it was because we were on that momentum, that march.
I thought you meant the year 1920. I was like,
But I just think as well, this season, I think the fact that, you know, City is starting to move away, I just think it is losing a bit of intensity out of the crowd in the league games, because we, you know, we all want to see us, we want to be in the ground to see us lift the league. But yeah, if we get, you know, the game against Inter Milan in the Champions League, it will be absolutely buzzing. I've got no doubt about that.
Yeah, what I would say is, though, Fuad, I normally go in the upper Kenny Dalglish, as it's known now, and I've got two nice seats there with nice people around us, so I will have a bit of a sing every now and again when we want to, but generally, you know, it's a little bit more sedate. I was in the Kop at the weekend, and I was looking forward to it. I was on Andy Heaton's season ticket, because Andy, along with every other prick we know, was on a corporate. honest to God, that was the only person. I was the only person in taggies after the game. He had that four glasses of champagne. It was an absolute disgrace.
Who didn't have a gift bag?
It was an awful one, Harriet. Where's my gift bag? I'll sell out anytime. Anyway, so I was in the Kop, and I was looking forward to it, thinking, oh, it'll be good, you know, some younger people. And it was older. The people around me were older than the pricks who were sitting by in the Kenny, honestly. I was the youngest by about 20 years, and so, as someone, you know, Robbie was talking about, you know, bog roll and chaos before. As someone who lives by that mantra, Fuad, do you want to, you know, get rid of the old codgers like me and Nicky was there in 1920 and a younger cop? Would that be the solution?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think the blend is always good, isn't it? You need the mix. And I think, you know, where I was, and it's quite different, isn't it? Even parts of the cop feel really different. And, you know, this season I've been mainly kind of 305, 306. And, you know, you do get, you know, it feels like most of the songs are still started by the same people. And, you know, the few familiar faces that you're used to seeing are still there every week and sort of trying to get things going. It's funny, isn't it? I think there's a bit of, you know, last season and how, you know, the big kind of thing that was thrown at you, and rightly so, was, you know, Liverpool aren't the same without the crowd, and Anfield's not the same without the crowd. And, you know, it's almost like this season, you know, because of how Liverpool started as well, and it looked like, you know, it's the same old Liverpool again from 1819, 1920. You know, we want to right the wrongs, and it's the players and the fans kind of together. And the stakes, because of how high the stakes are and how, you know, we've been through the 1819 season and the 1920 season where, you know, it feels like every game you just can't drop any points. And this season, it's sort of been like that at the beginning where the stakes feel so high. Everyone's so tense a lot of the time because you know what this Man City side can do. You know what it takes to win the league now. Whereas, you know, we had that kind of sense of adventure, didn't we, with the season. You know, we won the league in the season before that because, you know, it was all kind of a bit new to us. Everyone was up for it. And, you know, even then, the manager still criticised the atmosphere. I remember that Leicester game, I think it was, in 1819, where he basically said, you're all a gang of shithouses and you need to, like, stick with the team. And
not in so many ways. Yeah. That was the message.
That was the message I got. And, it, you know, the Brighton game will always stick out to me, I think, from this season, because I found it really mad how, you know, it was 2-1 and it was like we were down, you know, 3-1 and there was still half an hour to play. And even when it went to 2-2, no one really believed that we would, at least where I was, no one really believed that we'd go on to win it. And that's a weird one to kind of figure out. And I think it is just because of how, you know, you're kind of always thinking two games ahead and two steps ahead, or this Man City side is going to do this, or this Chelsea side is going to do this. So the tension's now got to the stage where we know what it takes. So you don't have that same sense of, oh, this is new, let's just go with it and see where it takes us. Like it felt like it was in 1819. And like Nicky said, I think Europe's the big one this year. You know, the Madrid game I thought was quite good at home. The Milan game as well was decent. So hopefully that's the one that sort of like gets everyone back and gets everyone, you know, feeling that sense of occasion again. And I can't speak for the last kind of few weeks because I've not really been here, but it does sound like it's sort of dipped a little bit. And maybe that's just, you know, generally because of how things are, you know, in the world, maybe there's a little bit of that. But hopefully this European run can be the one where we're sort of like, yeah, this is the Anfield atmosphere that we sort of have seen in large chunks over the last few years.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with everything that's been said, more or less. A few big games and it'll be back where it should be and everyone will be raving about it again. But I will say, we need the days back where you used to go on the cop to a certain age and then progress to the main stand or the Kenny, sort of bring that back. I'm far too old to be on there. So it's only to be the youngest person on Mevo. But never mind. Okay, thanks a lot for all that. We'll do a couple of sort of bit more fun ones then. I've lost my place. So Ben Raymond wants to know, where does Rafa go for his next job and will he be considered for the Premier League job again? You mentioned Rafa there before, Robbie. Do you get anyone in the Premier League? Give him another go?
You'd be better off a Belvale job, Santa. I reckon. I've got proper mixed feelings about this because I think he's finished. I just don't see where he goes from there now. You know, whether he moves to the Far East or to China or something like that, I don't know. But I just can't see an English club going in for him after that, because that was like, I mean, as hilarious as I found the last 7 months watching them there, at times, part of me now feels a bit sorry for him, because I absolutely adored Rafa Benitez up until the day he took the Everton manager's job. I did, and I don't know why, and I know not everybody feels like this, but it just kind of altered my perception of him. I don't know if they just did. And I think he already had quite a negative perception of him in various aspects of, like, of the media in particular in Britain. You know, even when he was our manager, people used to say, you know, we fluked Istanbul, he's negative, he's reactive. And then it wasn't until really that he went to Newcastle and he Chelsea, weren't he? He did well at Chelsea when no one wanted him there. And then he kind of does all right at Newcastle, keeps them above, you know, tread and water when things are you know, they were in a bit of a pickle on the ownership side. And I think it was around that point people really started to like take, you know, pay attention to how good of an all-round manager he was. But that Everton job, if ever there was a basket case club, and that, and look, personal feelings aside about Everton, I just don't think anyone at the minute can go in there and do a good job. But I just think because of Rafa's baggage, I just think having taken that job at the time he has, I think that screwed him. And I can't see any. I mean, you never know. He could end up back in Newcastle. Or maybe it doesn't work out with Eddie Howe. Maybe he gets sacked and they take him back. I don't know. That's the only route I could see for him. I just don't see how he's going to recover from that, because it was an absolute clusterfuck. It was bad, man.
Yeah, and it was about as disastrous as it gets, really, Nicky. I didn't think it was going to end well, but, you know, it's sort of a fairly spectacular one. Do you think other clubs will look at him? The problem he's got now is that some of these head coaches are 20 years younger than him, aren't they? And you think, you know, would a football club take a chance on someone like that, really, rather than going for, you know, someone who is he a little bit yesterday's man?
Well, yeah, I think he probably is. You can't see him getting a job in a big club, either sort of in Europe or in England. But I don't think you could rule him out going to pretty much anywhere else, because he, you know, I was thinking about this yesterday. He's like the complete opposite of Klopp, isn't he? In that, you know, Klopp is very quite clear. He wants to retire quite early. His life after football is important. Whereas Rafa just seems obsessed with working anywhere. I mean, he was in China, and of course they were paying a lot of money there. You could see him popping up, I reckon, in the Indian League. You could see him in Australia. He just doesn't, you kind of think, you must have so much money, Rafa. What's he walked from Everton with, about £8 million or something?
Yeah.
Just enjoy living on the Wirral with your dogs. But he just, he's sort of driven, but he's not. So I do also think there will be teams in England, maybe even in the lower bit of the Premier League, who would offer him a job, because you've seen this before. You know, you have the same old, you know, cycle of Allardyce and, you know, whoever else. Who's all the other tired, stale managers? But I think he will work again, and probably in England as well, but it won't be for any of the top clubs. But I just think that's more because of a lack of imagination from the owners or the board than anything else.
I mean, that is fair. In a world where both Roy Hodgson and Steve Bruce were managing Premier League clubs last season, maybe another job for Rafa will be around the corner. I don't know, Phil. You're Mr. International. Where are you sending Rafa next?
Honestly, I think I want 15 minutes with him just to sit down and tell him, Tranmere Rovers, just wait. Just wait. Give it a couple of seasons. I've just had a little Google here and, you know, they're doing well. They're second in League Two. The manager seems to be well-loved. I mean, Mickey Mellon's Tranmere Rovers league, fewer goals than anyone bar Man City. So he needs to wait a little bit until that changes.
He could buy Tranmere now, couldn't
I mean, he?
He could buy them and then fall out with himself.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be brilliant. You might as well just enjoy it. You know, have his little beach walks in between training and, you know, just chill out now. I think it's time for that. And he doesn't need this high stress of going to mad clubs and doing all this, because the money's done. You know, he's got everything he needs. And I think he should just wait it out, see where he can take them. What a story that would be. You know, maybe it gives some good exposure to the lower leagues as well. So if I was advising him, I'd tell him, just enjoy the rest of your life and do that.
Harriet, I saw your eyes light up when a life of in a big house walking dogs on the Wirral was pitched. I mean, it sounds all right to me. You know, I mean, I'm up for retirement to that.
Sounds like you're living a dream. Can I also just say you've asked Phil out as Mr. International and he's giving you travel here?
It's over the water, isn't it?
Yeah, it's absolutely ages away. I don't know how people get there. No, honestly, I think for me, Rafa's not. He wants to stay in England, doesn't he? Like, that's the whole point. He came back and managed Everton because he wanted to be local. He wanted to be in his house with his dogs on the Wirral. So if he's going to go anywhere, I think it's going to be literally somewhere where he's able to commute or at least stay around this area. So for me, the only real option is Newcastle if Eddie Howe doesn't work out. And I only say that because I feel like he's just still quite well respected there. He sort of left on not great terms, and a lot of fans still liked him there. They still want him around. So he's probably, that's probably one of the only clubs now that where they actually fully welcome him back and think, okay, he can actually bring us some success. Because he's not had a good few years, really, has he? And a lot of that wasn't down, to be fair, to him. Like, Everton's problems, you know, were way beyond Benitez, and I think that's unfortunate for him, because it's kind of the blame's been put on him, because the blame has to be put somewhere, and the nature of football is so fast-paced now, isn't it, that you get a bad run of results and a bad few months and you're gone and on to the next. But I just think he needs to calm down. He's got, you know, does a lot of charity work, he's got a nice life, just take a breath, transmit. He's got so many options. You know what, I'll give him Fuad's number and he can go to Fuad for some advice and he'll sort him right out. But yeah, nowhere or Newcastle, I think, is probably the most realistic next move for Rafa.
You'll probably go to Man United, the mad bastard. See how that works out. Okay, I enjoyed that. I keep going onto the computer for the questions, and it is on my phone because on the Facebook subscribers group, we get them from, by the way. So if you're on Facebook, join that and you can join in with this. Our friend Robbie Fowler wants to know, what member of the Liverpool squad would you like to go on a tour of their home country with? So basically, one of the current squad takes you to their home country and takes you around, let's say, for 2 weeks. So what you go, all right, so whatever length of time you want. I'm not the boss of you on that. Do you know what I mean? Harriet, who are you going for?
Oh, well, if you're going for 2 weeks, I feel like you're not going somewhere in Europe, are you? So my initial thought was maybe Jota, and we'd have a nice just little trip round Portugal. We'd go to Porto. We just have some nice food. We'd have a nice time. But 2 weeks, the long
time. No, go cut it down to a week if you want, if you're busy, Harriet.
Well, no. I mean, it depends. Will you let me have the 2 weeks off work? That's what I'm asking, basically. Because if not, we're going to have to go for a week.
No. I mean, you can't have the next 2 weeks off.
No, don't worry. I'll be here. But I think maybe Egypt, like go to Egypt with Salah, that would be fun, wouldn't it? You get a lot of information out of Salah over the course of 2 weeks as well. I think you'd slowly be able to like break him down a bit. You'd be like, right, come on, tell me about your life. What's going on? And then you'd also get to see like how... I think there's a lot of talk about the hype around Salah within Egypt and like how much people love and respect him. You get to see that firsthand, and how incredible would that be? You know, like those celebrities that you see on the red carpet, and that loads of people are taking photos of them, and they've just got like their, you know, their wife who no one knows, or their husband no one knows next to them, and you're always like, God, I want to be that for a day. So I feel like that's who I'd be with Mo Salah. So I'm going to Egypt, I'm having a lovely tour, feeling like a celebrity, getting treated like a princess, and we'd have a great time. So can I have 2 weeks off, please, from... from Monday
1st of February, you can have it 2 weeks. I'd also have it work with you, Harriet. I'd back you to come back with that contract signed as well, to be honest with you.
I'd box that off as well, no worries.
I mean, I'm sorry to just give you more action points, but there you are, if you get that done as well. Nikki, 2 weeks in Egypt, or you fancy something else?
Brazil all the way.
So which one of our Brazilian gentlemen are you going to let escort you around?
Well, that's tricky.
Because I think you're getting very different experiences.
I agree. I think it's going to be Alisson Becker. I'm a bit worried me and Bobby couldn't speak very much, although I suspect his English is better than he makes out.
You'd have a real party though, wouldn't you? You'd have a great time.
You would, but I think Alisson Becker would be kind of up for that as well. Oh, I don't know. Would they take you to church all the time? I don't think I can do that. But then Bobby's a bit... might do that as well. But no, it's got to be Brazil.
I don't think it's a holiday. I think if you're saying it's a holiday, do you know what I mean? You'll be on the horses with Alisson.
No. Alisson, I think.
Be baptised.
You baptise me in the morning. He can cook me barbecue and steak on his barbecue at lunchtime. I love all the samba stuff. You know, I just think... I'd come back in another life as a Brazilian. They are the happiest people. They just sing and dance all the time. Love to go there. And then in the evening, a big sing-song around the barbecue with him on his guitar. I think that's good. And I also think Alisson's, one of his, his little boy, the 2 or 3 year old, if you see him on Instagram, is the cutest little thing ever. So I'll even babysit for them one night as well. So yeah, Alisson Becker all the way, I think.
Harsh on Ted there, but never mind. Fuad, where are you going?
No, Ted's the best blonde one. The other one. Very dark hair.
Nice save, Nikki. Fuad, 2 weeks away with a Liverpool player. their country?
It's no other answer than Bobby Firmino for me. I think an intense week is all you need, though. I think you need, you need 2 days. You get there, a little bit of acclimatization, get over the jet lag, straight out with him. And then I think you need that little day in between with Alisson out in the countryside, maybe. Just a little bit of a detox with all his mad juices that he drinks. And then back with Firmino again. I think it'll be great. I think he'd have, his mates would be interesting as well. And he seems like if I reckon if you could speak Portuguese with him and you could, talk to him in his native tongue, he must be quite interesting. Like it feels like his outlook's quite interesting. I'd just like to get to know him a little bit and see what's what. And because he's come from, I think he's come from a difficult background as well. And it'd just be interesting how he's become how he is now. So yeah, the Brazilian party scene with Firmino is for me.
I just remembered either Mal one of his mates at that party we went to through.
I won't tell him I know you then.
just keep me out of it. He was a bellend, though, Robbie, save me. Yeah, where are you going?
Yorkshire. From an anthropological point of view, watching James Milner stomp around the Yorkshire moors, man, drinking that dinner, making Yorkshire pudding, I just think that'd be the fucking dream. No, actually, seriously, I'd like to go to Japan. I've always wanted to go to Japan. I think it's like a proper fascinating country and culture, and so I'll just get Taki Minamino to take me there and just, show me around for 2 weeks, and I'll be jet lagged.
Yeah, everyone always comes back from Japan, don't they? So there we are. But there we are. Really good answers. Enjoyed that. It feels like content somehow. I'd like to make it. And I'm sure everyone will be up for that.
Me and Ferb will take that. That can be our project. Yeah. We'll work on that.
We'll meet again next week, John.
Well, yeah. Well, I'll come back. All good. Right, just sort of flicking through these here. Just want to pick a couple of good ones. But where are we? Bit of chat about Kate Gordon. He'll be nice to focus on him. How good do you think he is compared to other young players that you've seen at the same age? And how far do you think his career could go? It's tricky for you, isn't it? Because you don't want to put too much pressure on him, but. I keep forgetting how young he is. He's now our fourth youngest Premier League player. He's our second youngest ever goal scorer. He looks confident. He came in with a decent pedigree as well. No Derby County. I speak to a couple of Derby fans regularly. They were absolutely gutted when he went, but obviously with the financial situation the Derby were in, they couldn't necessarily keep hold of him and probably needed the few quid that they got from Liverpool. There's no such thing as a sure thing, but I mean, he's doing pretty well.
He is, and he's doing everything you could kind of ask him to do at this level. And, like you said, when he came in, I remember reading some quotes from Rooney, and, if you got someone like him talking about you the way in which he did, then you've got all the kind of raw ingredients there. I guess the age thing as well, you are kind of waiting to see how he develops physically and all the rest of it. That is unfortunately kind of like the reality for Premier League footballers and what you kind of need, especially in this Liverpool side and in the position that he'll play. That strength does need to develop, because you look at the wingers that we do have and the forwards that we do have, they're all really strong and can do all the other bits of the game as well. So you'd hope that bit comes along with it and he's in the best environment possible for that to develop. But yeah, he's looked great. I think the little cameos, he came on, it was really noticeable when he came on Sunday, how Henderson was straight away up to him. He did a little 1-2 with him and he was straight over giving him an high five. So he's got everything around him. That's the most important thing, I think. And for him to get to this stage where he is asking the manager questions and he is in the match day squads, clearly shows that he's got the right attitude, the right mentality. And there's clearly an example there. It looks like Trent's a little bit of a bigger brother fit figure to him as well, which is great. So there's all these little things there that hopefully means that he does, he is part of the future and kind of like the next evolution of this Liverpool team.
I think for young players, Robbie, it's all about taking the chances when they come, because there's a little bit of luck always involved, but also when you get your chance, it's showing what you're capable of when it's there, because it might be another sort of year or so now before that chance sort of emerges again. There's a combination of factors, which means we're a bit light up top at the moment. So he's come in and he's took that, and history is littered with these examples, isn't it? When these players are thrown in, it's do they take the chance when he's there? And so far he has.
Yeah, he has. He looks so confident, and I think that was evident even in pre-season. You know, I think he played a couple of times in pre-season, and I think in one of the last games he played, he looked like he was getting knocked off the ball quite easily. But then against Shrewsbury the other week, he just looked much stronger for an hour. And then yesterday, you know, we came on about 10 minutes in Elder Zone. I think it's what I find quite interesting about it at the moment is like he's 17. Curtis Jones is 20, Harvey Elliott's 18, Kanate is 22, Spence 23. You've got some top young players there, all within 5 years of each other. And I think they're all going to be pushing each other on. And I think I think all of these lads are going to make a career at Liverpool. And the reason I think that is, I think if you're the youngster coming in and you're coming into a dressing room of all the players, I think it could probably be quite overwhelming. I think unless you're exceptional, like maybe Robbie Fowler, Michael Owen, you'll get lost. You know what I mean? But I think with these five, I think with those lads, obviously Trent and Jones, they're already kind of like established. But I think with Gordon and Elliot, I think because there's other lads a similar age to them, I think that it just gives them a better platform to kick on. I think they're all in it together, and I think they're all going to go on this journey together. And I think it's quite exciting, to be honest with you. I know, like a lot. I mean, every now and again, I get caught up about how old our squad looks and so on and so forth. But then you've got this little pocket of players there who are all fantastic. Their ability is fantastic, you know, exceptional. And I think to see someone at 17 years of age walk onto an Anfield pitch and you know, just act like he belongs there. It's quite inspiring. I wish I was like that at fucking 17.
Yeah, I mean, Robbie makes a really good point there, Harry. It's about the idea of them all pushing each other on and they're all buzzing off each other's successes. And you can see that, you know, when Tyler Morton gets a little go in midfield, all the others are congratulating him. And, you know, it doesn't seem like there's any jealousy there. In fact, quite the opposite. I think they're thinking, well, if he's got to go and he's done all right, then that helps me really. And it gives them confidence, but also, you know, maybe, you know, they're thinking, well, it's told the manager that you can give us a go. And it all feels like they're pushing us along. And then they've got someone like Trent there. It's mad to think of someone's big brother because, you know, he seems still so young to us. But for them, you know, he's probably their idol, you know, someone they've looked up to throughout the academy, someone who was, you know, in that bracket of Robbie was talking about before, you know, the superstar who was probably always going to make it in some way. It was just how and how good he could be, you know. So to have someone like him, who's only a little bit older than him, but has achieved so much and has won so much, a lot of things are sort of set up for them to do well.
Well, yeah, and I think especially if you look at the sort of League Cup and FA Cup games this season, what I think has worked really well and Klopp sort of tried to go for is this mix of the experienced players and that spine where you have players and leaders on the pitch like Virgil van Dijk and like the goalkeeper at the weekend, and then you mix in these younger players, and I think almost they can feed off of each other and like learn so much from each other, because I think there's been times where someone like Kate Gordon comes in and shows what he's capable of in like the first 5-10 minutes, and then the rest of those experienced players for the rest of the game think, okay, yeah, I can lean on him a bit more. He's not just a 17-year-old kid coming in for a game. He's someone that we can rely on, that's going to create, that's going to be an imposing figure on the pitch. And I think from that and that trust that they get within the context of an actual game and a game at Anfield where there's lots of people watching them and they're fulfilling their dreams, it just really inspires them and spurs them on to keep going and keep pushing forward. And having someone like Trent, like you mentioned, and even like playing with Van Dijk and all those players around them, that can only be a positive thing for them. And I think we've seen it, haven't we, since they blended the academy and the first team training a bit more, that it's really they've both really benefited from each other, because you can bring these players in for one-off games and they just understand the mentality and how we play, and maybe that's not, you know, their actual footballing ability isn't up to scratch just yet, and they've still got loads to learn, and they show their own experience in moments, but they get it, and that's the main thing. And I think with Cade Gordon, you just can tell that he really gets it already. And I think like at the weekend, I was so willing him to score that goal when he had that chance, and that everyone was so behind him, weren't they? Because they just wanted him on his Premier League debut to get a goal. But you know, even getting in front in that position, and it just shows how much he's capable of. And I think a lot of people have spoken about his natural goal scoring capability, and now they've just got to improve the areas of the game around it. But if he's already got so much natural and raw talent, the only way is up for him. And it's such an exciting player to have in our, you know, be able to see in flashes this season. I hope we see more of him as he continues to develop, and I can only see that going upwards and him getting better and better.
Do you agree with that, all that, Nikki? You enjoying watching him develop?
Yeah. In fact, as Robbie was talking about all the young players, I just love watching him. I've loved Tyler Morton this season when he's come on. It wouldn't bother me at all if he started at Arsenal this week. And also, you know, a few years ago, there's always thing about, you know, the League Cup should be binned for the teams that are in Europe.
Yeah.
But honestly, I think the League Cup games, they're some of my favourite games of the season. I love it seeing the young players play. I mean, that Leicester game just before Christmas was the best game I've been to all season, or from enjoyment. I absolutely loved it. And, you know, Cade Gordon, you know, against Shrewsbury last week when he, you know, he just took that goal so well. So I just think it's great. I mean, will he have a great career in Liverpool? I hope so, but you don't know. I think the only young player I've ever seen kind of make his debut for Liverpool, and there was a doubt in my mind that he would go on, was I was at Selhurst Park in, oh God, 97, something like that, when Michael Owen came on and made his debut and scored his first goal. I remember coming out of the ground that night thinking, he's definitely going to be a player for us. With everyone else, you think, yeah, that, you know, they've got a fair chance, but I want us to definitely carry on being in the League Cup. I want it to carry on for Premier League sides, because honestly, I love seeing these young players. That's how they gain their experience, isn't it? So,
good. Okay.
I reckon we will see him at some point at Arsenal or Palace this week. Wouldn't be surprised if we get some minutes in London in the next week.
Yeah, no, good shouts. Okay, we'll do one more before we go. And it's actually come via Emma Sanders. So Emma Sanders messaged me before saying this is a really good question for AFQ Football. And so it's from a Twitter account called GoalscorerC. And it's, you can be any footballer in history for one game and one game only. So your knowledge of the outcome is wiped at the start and you experience the match as they would have done with all their reactions and emotions. Which player and what game do you pick? So basically, you live the game that they've lived. You can't change anything. You can't alter any of them. And you obviously, you know, don't have to be suddenly figuring it out how to play football. Like I will be doing. You're just experiencing that game from that person and what they did. Emma Sanderson messaged me, and then her answer was, Zinedine Zidane, World Cup Final 2006. To be honest, I just want to know what it feels like to headbutt someone, which is him. Which is a very Emma Sanders response. So she's going for that. Out of all the Zinedine Zidane moments to pick, she's going for that. But Robbie, which one would you go for?
Gerrard in Istanbul. I think just because of it, like where he was at as well. Like obviously because it was Istanbul, but also where he was at. Because he was essentially at a crossroads in his Liverpool career as well. And I think everything hinged on that game. So, I think, I don't know, I think that first half, I can't imagine, but you know what I mean? Just to walk through that first half, to actually see the team you're captaining, knowing that it could potentially be the last game you'd ever play for them, 3-0 down in the biggest game in the last 25 years in the club's history. And then to just kind of like, so just dragged them kicking and screaming to the trophy, essentially. I think I just love to see, like, just to see it through his eyes, just Steven Gerrard, because I think that night I know we've already spoke about Rafa, but a lot of people talk about Rafa and Rafa being the kind of the driving force about what happened that night. But I think Gerrard, you know, you look at that penalty Alonso scores. It's just pure will from Steven Gerrard. Do you know what I mean? Just dragging to the area. And yeah, for me, just that game, and because it speaks for itself, really.
Yeah, Stevie in Istanbul is a good answer. Nikki, what would you go for?
Well, I Google actually whether he started the game, but I was actually thinking of the Liverpool 4 Newcastle 3 game from what 96 is it? The first 4-3. Is still the best game I've ever been to. I mean, just end to end, the whole game. And I just think to play in that must have been incredible. So I was probably going to say Collymore because he scored the winner, but I was trying to remember whether he even started the game. I can't actually remember. But just the fact, you know, it just went one way then the other. And the atmosphere at Anfield that night was brilliant. So I think that's the first one that came to my mind.
I'm pretty sure he started. Rushy comes off the bench because he's involved, because it's Barnes, Rush, and Collymore close it in. So I think I'm pretty sure Collymore started that one. It is a good answer as well. Imagine scoring the winner in that game, cup end as well. Harriet, we're throwing you into a footballer's body. You're experiencing an amazing 90 minutes, or one with the headbutt of someone, whatever you fancy. What are you going for?
I can't get this answer out of my head, so I'm just going for it. But I'm being Origi in the 2019 Champions League final, purely because you get the best of everything. Like, you're sitting on the bench 60 minutes, just taking it all in, watching the game, having a lovely time, and then you're coming on and you're scoring the winner. And I mainly want to be at him for this game, because I just want to know what goes on in his mind, like, consistently. It's a general question I have, like, what goes on in Divock Origi's mind all the time? Like, does he ever reach, like, peaks of emotion? Because he's just always so chilled, isn't he? Like, even after he scores that goal, like, his celebration wasn't even that mad. So I just want to know what's going on in his mind when it's 87th minute and he's scoring a goal in the Champions League final to seal the deal for Liverpool. And yeah, I want to be that person for that 90 minutes. And why would you not want to be Divock Origi for 90 minutes, to be fair?
It's a really good answer. It's a really good answer. And then you go on to get to dance with Fuad Hassan later on that evening.
Well, I wasn't going to include that, but that's also a large part of the decision-making process. Yeah.
Fuad, would you pick Divock so you get to dance with yourself?
Yeah. I mean, that'd be interesting, wouldn't it? The first thing that came to my mind was loads of Divock Origi moments, to be fair. Mainly because you just want to, like, you just want to be there doing something mad and just looking at the crowd. I think that's the thing. So, like, the Salah one at City sticks out as well, because you just want to see what that away end is like after you've done something really, really good. But I think in terms of pure football, I think that Suarez game against Norwich when he scores four, and they're like four of the maddest goals. Just like that game where you just, everything you do, no matter how crazy it is, just comes off. I think that'd be brilliant, because some of the goals he scored in that, I think, just like ridiculous. You could try them 100 times and, you know, you'd never hit one. But I think I'd go for that. The Gerrard West Ham one as well. I know I've named about 10 here, but like the Gerrard West Ham FA Cup final. But the cramp feels painful. I don't know if I want to go through that. I don't want to go through the cramp again.
I think when you're last, you get to do a few. It's a bit like on Pointless. You get to get up, do the rest of the board. I think you're allowed a few more. And I'm sure Gerard forgot all about his cramp when he sort of early that in. Some really good answers throughout. I've had a really, really nice Monday evening. So thanks a lot to Nikki, to Harriet, to Robbie, to Fuad. And of course, to you guys for sending in some belter questions. I'm sure there'll be Adam back next time.